Welcome to Ojibwe Stories, Gaga Nunanada. I'm your host, Eric Reddix. We're having a conversation with Gordon Jourdain, who grew up in the Ojibwe community of Lac La Croix in northwest Ontario.
You know, I think you mentioned before on previous shows being raised by your grandmother and how when you speak, it's kind of she's speaking through you.
Yes.
So I was wondering if you could talk a little bit on this topic of ethics about how growing up, the things she would tell you about the proper way to be as you were growing up.
The most powerful thing that she ever said to me was not verbal. It was nonverbal. My grandmother taught me by showing me how to be like. I remember as a child because I stayed in the same room with my grandmother, and most of the time I would sleep in the same bed as she did, and I would wake up to her humming, singing by humming some Anishinaabe songs, and she would be brushing her long black hair. She had black hair until she was 100 years old, and it was really long, like it was waist length. And she'd be combing her hair and singing melodically as I woke up to that every morning. And sometimes I would braid her hair. She wouldn't ask me to do it. It's like something that I wanted to do. So I would braid her hair, and then she would put it up in a bun. From that image and from that experience, I heard once about how do you want your grandchild to remember you? I have grandchildren, of course. I have two I have a grandson and a grandchild. And my brothers and sisters, their grandchildren are my extended grandchildren as well. So I have more than just two extended grandchildren. I have long hair, and sometimes it's all black. And I braid my hair too. So when I say that the most powerful words my grandmother used were nonverbal ones, it's the way that she conducted herself and took care of herself that I remember the most as lessons on how I should be like as a Anishinaabe inini. Gentleness, caring, and always, you know, with unconditional love for everything that she did and for all humans and all life forms. I'll probably never be like her because she grew up in a time when everybody was like that.
Right.
I'll try to emulate that in my personal life. And I try to emulate that in my classroom when I'm teaching the children so that they have some semblance of what it was like a long time ago.
What are some of the differences, you think, then, between those kind of Western ethics, academic ethics that are rooted in like Western philosophy, and what you know as traditional Anishinaabe ethics or ways of behaving?
The word ethics never occurred to me until, of course, I took some academic classes about what that is. But we have a lot of, not different per se, but we have complementary ideas about what that is. I always say in all of my classes that this is not the first time I've ever heard about this or knew about this, but this is the first time I've been able to arrive at a label that says this is what this is. So the term ethics, I learned about it first before I heard what the terminology is. Ethical living in traditional Ojibwe starts from the time you are born, even prior to that. And I think we talked about that at one time, about the journeys that as Native American people, we believe we started from the world of spirits. Our journey begins from there. And our second journey would be at the second of conception, when we start to live in the vessel of our mother, our biological mother. During those journeys, we are being programmed how we're going to respond to certain stresses in our physical life. So the first time we are born and take our breath, we are then a physical being, of course, without a name and without a connection to the spirit world.
Mm-hmm.
The very first important thing that happens to us during the development of our identity is to secure or procure somebody that will make the connection to the spirit world, retrieve our spirit name that we started off with initially,
mm-hmm.
and make those two the physical vessel, which is our human shape and form, and have those together so that we can have a balanced spiritual essence and a physical essence to
mm-hmm.
who we are as human beings. That's the beginning of our ethical journey, of course.
As we go through life, what are some of those things that in traditional Anishinaabe ways are important as far as ethics and ways of interacting with people, do you think?
I always start with, because of the nature of my understanding of what education is, I start from developing what my answer is going to be.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I started to do, was explain how in the development of ethics, as Native American people or as Native people everywhere, we understand that we have a spiritual essence about us, and we also have a physical essence as well.
Mm-hmm.
And those two combined is what develops into a language. Our language is comprised solely of those two elements when we describe things.
Mm-hmm.
When we speak or when we answer questions like the one that you're asking me. It has been developed over many centuries on how we are to be as ethical people. The understanding of benchmarks and standards and those kinds of things, as I understand them now, because I'm academically trained on how to label those things, we do not necessarily have those kinds of benchmarks in Ojibwe understanding of the developing person or the growth and development of somebody, but we celebrate them by increasing the responsibilities that our children right. have as they grow up, and as uncles and aunts and grandmas and grandpas and great-grandmas and great-grandpas, we celebrate those occasions with different rites of passages in the lives of our children. And the social structure of our communities, of course, and I'm talking about historically,
right.
And most of us that grew up in that system still remember those, because I remember them because I lived them. And those are the kind of things that I wish to leave behind for people to see, that we have a system that's comparable to a lot of different other academic systems or
mm-hmm.
educational systems. They're comparable. We just have a different way of marking those great developments in our mm-hmm. in our life.
And do you think the traditional way, there was more leeway, there was more based on each individual kind of person's development, that some people developed at a faster rate, a slower rate, whereas in Western education, you're in first grade, you're in second grade, on down the line? And
I believe it's more personalized. It's not like traditionally the K-12 system is more of a cohort system where everybody right. that's the same age goes through or struggles through. trying to get themselves to the level where they either meet, surpass, or do not meet the benchmarks mm-hmm. that they're expected to have by the educational systems. But in Ojibwe tradition, you know, it's okay if we all develop at different rates.
Right, and in different aspects,
yeah,
right? Because it's
yeah.
not just certain academic skills you have. It might be just personal growth might be different from how you perform at a certain intellectual level.
In that sense, I suppose there is a, I don't want to say that it's a leeway or anything, but we recognize that individual people will advance at different rates than others.
With the structure that we have, the broader structure, the Western structure in society at large, but in our communities, how do you kind of make it work better for individual Native students, or anybody actually that you might teach? In some ways, all kids are kind of the same, and then maybe Western education ignores that for everybody, not just Anishinaabe students.
Western education is designed for a certain person to be successful in, and it doesn't meet the requirements for everybody to be successful at it. Of course, Western education works for some Native people, but it doesn't work for all right. of the Native people. And Western education does not work for all white people as well.
Mm-hmm.
I like a personalized mm-hmm. education for a lot of people. Sir Ken Robinson says it best. We have to coordinate and design a program that best fits the person and adapt it to what their needs are.
Mm-hmm.
And as a Native American person, and him being a white person, we would have to collaborate and meet each other at that lens where this student is going to succeed. And I do that on a daily basis. I'm an immersion educator. I'm at a point in my life where I'm really, really lucky to have been educated in the traditional Ojibwe idea of what education is, and to be able to be educated in the Western
mm-hmm.
academic idea of what education is as well. I have a great understanding of both. And I think I'm in a rare position to be able to put those two ideas right. together. They may not be able to explain each other, but at least I recognize that both of them exist. And as an educator, no matter what color you are, you have to be able to recognize that both those things are necessary elements for us to educate people. We have to understand that they exist, and at times they exist separately, and mm-hmm. sometimes they will complement mm-hmm. one another or mix with each other. And as an educator, at least from my perspective, I'm very lucky to have multiple lenses through which to right. educate students with, rather mm. than just having a single bifocal
yep.
to look through.
Then going through life, as people mature and become adults, I just wondered your thoughts about ethics for us adults.
wow. I'm an educator, not a philosopher.
And I guess what I'm getting at here is, in our tribal communities, you know, we have these tribal enterprises, be it education enterprises, you know, tribal offices, medical, whatever, you know, whatever we're in. And we all kind of have the same goals, hopefully, right? But yet having these conflicts. And I just wonder if you had any thoughts about that conflict and about how kind of traditional Anishinaabe ethics can get around those conflicts. Because a lot of times those conflicts are about traditional values, and conflict is just a part of any kind of organization, but we see these kind of conflicts that take a toll on people, you know, and yet we all have the same goals. We all want to do the same things, no matter what organization we're in. I don't think anybody really takes a job on a reservation hoping to, like, sabotage it intentionally, you know.
Conflict is always an opportunity for healing. I want to use what I do for a living is speak Ojibwe, and I've been lucky enough, because of what I do as an educator and in my journey, to find what it is I need as a traditional person. I've had to leave the community where I grew up and mm-hmm. where I felt the most comfort in. And sometimes that comfort that we have in those communities stifles our creativity
mm-hmm.
because we are molded by one voice. One voice is very detrimental to understanding what everybody else is saying in the communities around us. I've journeyed to many, many communities, taught the Ojibwe language at all those communities, and the first thing that I ever did when they asked me to teach there was to go and talk to the elders and ask them their permission to do that. And I did it in Ojibwe.
Right.
Of course, I never, ever talked to the elders in English, not once. I always talked to them in Ojibwe. And I brought them, of course, the four gifts and let them know that I've been asked to teach Ojibwe and I want to have your permission to do that. And if you have any sources, and if I can use you for a resource as well.
Mm-hmm.
They were very, very happy to be able to do that. Because I come from a different geographical area on Turtle Island, I have mm-hmm. to be respectful wherever I go. I say that because I have a belief that there's not going to be anybody that's going to solve our issues other than ourselves. And I take that wholeheartedly. I truly, truly believe that is true in my case. I say that because as a Native American child in the school system, I recognized early that I had certain deficits that I needed to grow in. And one of them was being in a community where everybody thought the same way. There's nothing wrong with that, of course, right. unless it stifles you, and unless it prevents you from being able to communicate with others around you in a healthy way, with a healthy discourse with people. All the people that I've met in my life, I can understand like 80% of all the Ojibwe women in the elders that I spoke to. If I wasn't able to go around and talk to those elders, I'd have, of course, a closed opinion on what Ojibwe language is. And I would promote that one voice that I'm talking about.
Mm-hmm.
I think we have an opportunity to promote who we are by reaching out to others and having those. Some people are really uncomfortable in that discourse because I don't want to talk about what their feelings are, but you need to go to other communities and meet other people and talk to other people. And if we don't allow that kind of interaction or networking to occur, of course we're going to have conflicts and arguments, but those are a natural part of our lives, and if we don't use them as a way for us to heal, then we're in for a long, a long journey.
This is Ojibwe Stories Gaganunanada, a program of Ojibwe culture. Our guest today is Gordon Jourdain, who grew up in the Ojibwe community of Lac La Croix in northwest Ontario.
What role do you think the kind of, talking about this conflict in our communities, the role of some of the dysfunctional things that have happened to Ojibwe communities and all Native communities in the past 100, 150 years plays? I mean, is it that certain people, certain families are just hurt by all this stuff and it kind of manifests itself maybe in other ways, or?
I think I was really lucky where I grew up. We were totally isolated from a lot of different things.
Right.
A lot of different things that disrupted the social understanding of what community life is. Where I grew up, it was really, really healthy. At least that's the image I have in my mind.
Mm.
When I grew up there, the community was healthy. We did not have any kind of a social assistance program there. I don't even think we had any government structure at the community where I grew up. We had a hereditary chief, and we also had really strong adults and elders there. Everybody spoke Ojibwe. Nobody spoke English. The only person that spoke English was our teacher. The road to that community came in 20 years ago, and when that happened, so did everything else. And it came into our community, and our people were not prepared for what came there. In the 20 years that the road has been there, our people, and I'm just saying this from what I hear because I don't live there, have turned into what you're describing. A lot of people with conflict with each other.
Right.
A lot of people with conflict within themselves.
Mm-hmm.
Conflict within siblings, conflict within parents and children, grandmothers and grandfathers. So there's a lot of that conflict that apparently is going on there. And that wasn't there when I was growing up because everybody was strong in traditional Ojibwe understandings. So my answer, of course, is obvious.
Mm-hmm.
We need to be very strong in traditional understanding of who we are. We cannot be anybody else. I cannot be anybody else other than Maji Goneash, Vision Dudem, Danishinabe Gagigit, Danishinabe. Of course, I can learn about other things. I think that just educates me in a different context and to understand and resolve all those wounds and conflicts that I would have personally living in a space where people who are like me would be uncomfortable in. I don't feel uncomfortable when I go to places because I'm strong in my understanding of who I am as an Anishinaabe Inini.
I wonder if you had any thoughts, maybe advice even, about people working in, in organizations on the reservation, maybe off the reservation too, and trying to, do things the right way. the good way. And yet, a lot of times, I think when we're doing that, we see like roadblocks ahead of us. And we talked about some of the ways that there's just conflict. But what about how to deal with people that are above you and you're trying to accomplish things that, for lack of a better term, don't get it? And be that, you know, non-native people, other Ojibways, but they just don't get it. What would be some of your advice for dealing with that type of conflict and that type of situation?
I'm extremely happy with our youth. I work a lot with young children, 5 years old, 5-6 years old. And I also work a lot with younger adults around 20s. And it is through the language that I'm really excited about their outlook on life. Two of my kindergarten children, and without my prompting or pressure, they said, you know what, Maji, I'm going to be an Ojibwe language teacher when I grow up. That's how I want to answer your question. Frederick Douglass, and if I can't quote him properly, it's better to change the child than to change the adult. I may not have used the proper words, but that's right. One of the things that, of course, guides me is mm-hmm. is making sure that our children are strong so that when they become adults, they make healthy decisions. It's about healthy decisions and having not necessarily the capacity, but growing up, having an extremely healthy outlook mm-hmm. on who we are as human beings and how we interact with one another, that will help advance what we feel is rightfully how we should be treated in organizations. We, of course, need to come out of comfortable spaces to participate in preparing those children to get to that stage. And my outlook is long. It's longitudinal.
Long term.
Yeah, yeah. And if we establish the foundation that's solid, mm-hmm. maybe life for you and me will not be good right away, but our children and the children's children, mm-hmm. and that's traditional teachings. That's right. That's how we look at things. We mm-hmm. look, of course, 7 years behind us, and or right. 7 generations behind us and 7 generations right. ahead of us.
So do you think people just have to keep that in mind, that kind of long term, that things will get better, and maybe not to get so wrapped up in the, because people do, they get really despondent by the day-to-day of it, if that's their situation going on.
Mm-hmm. Every morning I wake up whistling mm-hmm. and smiling, because I know I'm going to be seeing the children and talking to them in Ojibwe. Mm-hmm. I absolutely love what I do.
Right.
And luckily I get paid to do that. Mm-hmm. But don't tell anybody. And love always overcomes fear, mm-hmm. will overtake fear. I learned that through, here I'm going to reach back again and go back to what I said originally when we started with this, is the spiritual aspect and the physical aspect of who we mm-hmm. are as Anishinaabe people. We understand through dreams that is how our Creator communicates with us. I had an absolutely horrible and scary dream. I've always had them since I was a kid. The critter that I'm most feared of is the makwa. Mm-hmm. But the makwa is the most influential part of mm-hmm. who we understand healing to be in traditional Ojibwe. It got to the point where makwa started to talk to me in Ojibwe. He said, Majiganayash, I'm never going to stop pursuing you. I'm going to catch up to you one of these days. Of course, I'm trembling in fear. And in my last dream, it did. It had its claw right over my chest, right here on my right side. And I could feel the pain of its claws right digging into my body. And I'm like, uh-oh, this is it. My worst nightmares of watching Hollywood-produced movies about how cruel and horrible and dangerous. And so I'm scared. I'm really, really scared. I know I'm not going to be able to get away. So what do I think about? Is I want to look over and say a few last words to the bear before he, of course, devours me and rips me up. And what I say is, Kishaweni Mendemishomis. I could see his nose breathing and his mm-hmm. you know, that image I have of a fierce, ferocious bear. Nothing happened. So he started to turn his head, and I'm like, oh no, this is it. whispered in my ear and said, "Gisawa namin gayigin na wishes."
Huh.
"I love you too, grandson."
Huh. That's riveting. And then you just woke up, or it just...
I just woke up, still trembling.
Oh, that's really powerful. Hmm.
And all this time I was running from all that.
And do you feel like long-term, like you feel better about...
Oh, yeah. I just saw a bear yesterday outside my yard. In my physical life, I'd go grab maybe a rifle and start trying to kill something that I don't understand.
Yeah.
It's part of that clash between humans and something that we don't understand. We try to quell and destroy those things that we don't understand. I know I have that capacity too because I am human.
Mm-hmm.
I can't categorize myself as being totally, totally absolved of all those kinds of things. I still have those feelings. I'm human after all. But to understand yourself as a human being and say, it's okay that people are like this. It's okay that people are not understanding. It's okay. It's theirs. I just love people. I pray for them. Even somebody that came up screaming mad at me a long time ago, I just said, "I hope you have a good day." And that person, indirectly, because it was hurting that person so bad that they were screaming at me, apologized to me indirectly through another person. So you give them that. Yep. It's theirs. You put up a wall and you don't let it come into your understanding of who you should be. I still go that way too. I still feel the conflict and the arguments and the hatred that's in this world because I let go of my understanding of what love and passion I should have for these people. The Dalai Lama, after he ran from his country, the person that he grew up with as a child stayed and got caught and was imprisoned by the people who took over Tibet. They met each other long, many, many years after. And he asked his friend, "Was there any time that you were afraid?" And his friend said, "Yes, there was a time that I was afraid. I was afraid because I felt I was going to lose passion for the people who detained me."
That's all the time we have today. I want to thank our guest Gordon Jourdain for sharing his stories with us. This is Ojibwe Stories Gaganunida. I'm your host, Eric Reddix. To listen again to past episodes of the program online, visit the program page at kumd.org and click on Ojibwe Stories. Ojibwe Stories Gaganunida is produced by KUMD and the Tribal Sovereignty Institute at the University of Minnesota Duluth, home of the Master of Tribal Administration and Governance, or MTAG, program, where students learn about leadership, law, sovereignty, and management from a tribal perspective. MTAG was designed by tribes for tribes, currently accepting applications for fall enrollment. More information can be found at umdmtag.org. Funding for Ojibwe Stories Gaganunida is provided in part by the UMD College of Education and Human Service Professions and by the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund.